This is KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. Last week, the U.S. House passed the American Health Care Act, a partial repeal and replace of Obamacare. Not all Republicans are celebrating. Washington's Republican Congressman Dave Reichert from King and Pierce counties told me he voted no because we don't know how much the new law will cost. And we do know, he says, that it'll raise premiums for old people and people with pre-existing conditions, and it will cut Medicaid.
What impact will occur to the Medicaid population, and especially, again, to those disabled seniors and disabled and special needs children? Those are the people that really need the help, and there will be, obviously, less money to address those issues. And my fear is that because of that, the services could be reduced.
At a town hall for an Idaho Congress member, Raul Labrador, a panelist said people would die because of this health care bill, and the congressman said,
"That line is so indefensible. Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care."
What to make of all of this and more about President Trump's first few months? My next guests voted for President Trump. Peter Gigante works in international trade. Catherine Green is a travel writer. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
So that Washington congressman said this new health care law, if it stays intact in the Senate, would cut Medicaid. President Trump said he would never cut Medicaid. The Congressional Budget Office said that the earlier Republican health care bill would mean 24 million people losing their insurance. President Trump promised everyone's going to be covered. Who do you believe and why, Peter?
Well, I don't know where this is going to end up. I think it's still in the process. My personal feeling is that with regard to health care, I don't believe people with pre-existing conditions should pay higher rates. And we'll see how this thing shakes out. That's not the reason I voted for Trump. Healthcare was not the most important issue to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to Medicaid and how that may or may not overlap with some of the provisions of the healthcare plan, certain cuts in Medicare might be justified if they're already being addressed within the plan itself. So a cut here or an expansion in the program covering what otherwise would have been covered by Medicaid would justify a cut. So I want to be careful not to brand cuts as necessarily a bad thing. But when it comes to pre-existing condition, I really feel that they shouldn't impact rates. And I feel pretty strongly about that. It's a long way to go before this health care plan is passed. Let's see what happens. And that's not the reason I voted for Trump to begin with.
Catherine, you were nodding your head somewhere in there.
I have to agree completely. I think this is one-fifth of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't know what it is. Healthcare, what the actual measure is. It's actually a tax that had to get out of the House, and I think that the Senate will probably make a pretty strong, good bill.
What is most important to you? What do you most want from President Trump?
Well, I wanted the Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. I'm like my other guest here, where I didn't agree necessarily with everything, but I had a priority of topics, and I voted on my top three.
Mm-hmm.
Same with me. Not necessarily the Supreme Court justice, but I think the trade and immigration and corporate tax rates, insofar as they impact employment in our working class, and also immigration as it touches upon our national security. Those are the two main issues for me: is trade and immigration. But the corporate tax reduction, I think, is absolutely vital too to create jobs in our working class. Which I feel, if we don't do, our country's going to be in deep trouble.
On immigration, what has President Trump done that's been the most valuable to you?
Well, so far, I think it's still a work in progress. You know, I think the overall strategy longer term is to develop a comprehensive immigration policy and implement it. So
while we're focused on deportations, you're saying the most important thing is a comprehensive reworking of immigration law?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fear mongering going on, and I just don't know that that's justified. I think if we all put our heads together and recognize that there is a problem that needs to be dealt with and start together crafting solutions that work on a comprehensive basis, our country will be much better off.
Do you care about a border wall that Mexico pays for?
I do think our southern border needs to be secured. And you can talk about whether a wall is effective in doing that. I think it probably would be pretty effective.
Is it on the way?
Well, we'll see how that shakes out. But you know, I would hope that we can secure our borders more effectively than we've been doing over the past, you know, many years.
I ask Catherine about things like President Trump promising that everyone's going to be covered and saying that there's going to be a big, beautiful border wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. I remember during the election that some of Trump's supporters said, you and the media are taking Trump literally but not seriously. And we, you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you still think that's true? And what is it that you take seriously about President Trump and not literally? And why is that important?
I take seriously that he's going to enforce the laws that are on the books. And if they're the wrong—
Which laws are we talking about?
Immigration mm-hmm. laws. If they're the wrong laws, then we need to change the laws. But we can't pick and choose laws. The laws are there for a reason. As for the wall, is it figuratively a wall, having been to Israel and Palestine? That's a really ugly, horrible thing. Would there be something that could protect the border, southern border, and make it so people couldn't come in as easily? That probably should be done.
What about you, Peter? Where do you take President Trump literally or seriously, and why does that matter? Because a lot of people are used to believing exactly what their politician says when running and governing.
Quick story, just to answer your question. I remember back in 1980 when Reagan first became president, and he was underestimated by people because he had been an actor. And his first meeting with Paul Volcker, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Reagan said to Volcker, do we really even need a Fed? And of course, it completely floored Paul Volcker and just, you know, had his mouth drop. And a lot of people said, well, Reagan's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. If you take him literally, he sounds like an idiot. But what he's really saying is, you know, I have the control here. I can replace you. I could eliminate the Fed. I could do this, that, and the other thing. Let's keep things in perspective.
So why is that valuable?
I think it's valuable because I think the president, I think Trump, one way to keep everybody on their toes is to create a little mystique, create a little mystery about where you stand, especially with our foreign relations. Of course, obviously, clarity is important in some instances. But I think a little unpredictability is healthy.
Catherine, you're nodding again.
I think a little unpredictability goes a long way.
What's an example of that? Where do you see Trump's unpredictability and say, yes?
I think that he doesn't tell people exactly what he's thinking is actually very similar to the governing powers in the Middle East in the way they think. And so therefore, they quote unquote get him better than in the way we do. So my friends that I have in Turkey and Lebanon and...
As I said, you're a travel writer.
Yeah,
you travel
yeah.
a lot.
They think he's the greatest thing. They think he can actually help get rid of ISIS, which they think is a complete abomination. So a lot of Muslims think that ISIS has hijacked their religion. And I think that's pretty great if he could let them worship their religion the way they want it worshipped and not have people have the misunderstanding that ISIS is representing a large group of Muslims, which it's not.
You think President Trump or any administration can get rid of ISIS, pick your threat by bombing it? Because it seems like experience is that there are lots of, there's ISIS and there's Al-Qaeda, and are we fighting an ideology, or is this somebody we can just bomb into the Stone Age and declare victory? What do you want from President Trump?
I don't want him to do any one thing. I mean, bombing something to oblivion isn't going to solve the problem. Helping people have economic growth to my other guest's point, mm-hmm. it's about economic trade and freedom. And not freedom, quote unquote, making everybody democratic, but the ability to work and trade and support your family and make a better life for your kids. That's how we actually take care of things in the Middle East. Mm-hmm.
Catherine, many of your family and friends voted for Hillary Clinton, and you voted for Obama in 2012. Have any of your friends or family come around to understanding your decision to vote for President Trump? Do they see what you see?
No, not at all. I told people I was coming on the show, and people spent 20 minutes trying to talk me out of it.
Which people?
My Hillary Clinton friends.
Oh, really?
You know, and I like listening to them, and they were somewhat polite listening to me, but most of the time was spent them correcting me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if we all could start talking to each other and have civil discourse, I think that we would actually have a better political climate, and maybe we could find that we're all, to some degree, trying to make a better world for our kids.
Peter, do you see any sign that anti-Trumpers are watching and learning and seeing the same kind of successes or potential that you seem to see in this president?
I'm hopeful, and that's the reason I'm here. Like she just said, I really feel, and I went to this symposium last week where they had Ask a Trump Supporter, 12 Trump supporters sitting eye to eye with people who didn't support Trump, and they asked questions, and they rotated like musical chairs. It was a three-hour deal. And I think as a result of that, everybody came away with the impression that we're really not that different after all. And so I think more dialogue is helping to bring people together. And I really don't think we're as far apart as people seem to feel.
I agree. I think the problem is we've been demonized and we're not given a chance to talk. And we really want it good for everybody. We're not trying to say it's our way or the highway. I think we're both sides should be willing to compromise and come up with a good solution. Take a little of this, a little of that, and slowly but surely we'll find what works.
Is there anything about President Trump that I haven't given you that chance to say that you feel like you don't get the chance?
No, I mean, we could go on and on about different topics specifically, but I just think if people keep an open mind and listen to one another and talk to one another, it will be brought together. I do believe Trump is a moderate at heart, and I think over the next 4 years that will become more clear. You know, politics makes strange bedfellows, and I think—
Why wouldn't he make his moderateness clear now? What do you mean? It's not clear.
I think our system is so polarized. I think you've got to, in order to get anything done, you've got to work with one side and then the other and then kind of move back and forth. And not allowing people to know precisely where you stand is the only way of accomplishing anything. I think his true colors will reveal themselves by the end of his first term. And I think I'm willing to bet that he'll be one of our most effective presidents.
Agreed? Or you seem hesitant, Catherine.
I think the Trump that was on the political campaign was the man who was the king of marketing. And I think he wanted every single one of his speeches covered, 100%. And he did it. He was successful. The problem is what makes really good campaigning isn't the same thing that makes really good leadership and governance. So to your point, I think we have to give him a chance to see now how he's going to step up and lead. I'm thrilled that he got everybody to agree on a budget. I wanted him in the first 100 days to find any issue that everybody could agree on. So I'm thrilled.
You mean the temporary don't shut down the government budget?
Yeah, because I thought everybody was going to go to their corner on that.
Okay.
So I'm happy that they found some common ground, even if it's for a short amount of time, because I'd like them all to start working together. And I think it looks bad for the Democrats not to come up and say, we can work on this policy, let's work on it together, because we are all Americans.
Well, I think he has a history, though, in his business career of negotiating. He even literally wrote the book on negotiation. I think he's in his element as president. I think he's comfortable in the role. He's dealt with foreign leaders before in the business world. He's very comfortable, you know, hosting people to his estate in Florida and things like that, his good rapport with Xi Jinping. I think he's in his element, and I think that if there's anyone who has the ability to negotiate and find compromise, it's him. And that's what's required right now because our system is so polarized, nothing will get done from either side unless you have somebody who's in there bobbing and weaving and taking things on in a compromised fashion. I think that's what will come out of this is a set of policies that represents a true compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give the president some more time and come back and do this again, okay? Will you come back?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay, Catherine Green, travel writer. Peter Giganti works in international trade, Trump supporters then and now. And we'll give the president more time, and that's our time for today. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.